The time is now. The future of our embedded design depends on it. It's Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry. Hello, everyone. I'm Amelia Dalton, and this here podcast, brought to you by EEJournal.com, is all about FMCs, compact PCs, the future of embedded design, and some seriously cool new battery technology. We've got quite a gamut to cover, so let's get started. My first guest is Richard Avery from 4DSP. Richard and I are talking about why the future is modular and what open standards like FMC and VPX buy us as engineers when it comes to FPGA mezzanine cards. Check it out. Hi, Rick. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, good to be speaking with you today, Amelia. Thank you.
So it's been a while since 4DSP has been on Fish Fry. So give my audience an update about what exactly 4DSP does.
So 4DSP is a provider of FPGA technology. We offer hardware, software, systems integration, and design services. So on the hardware side, we offer FPGA carriers, FMC modules, all subscribing to VITA standards such as XMC, PCIe, and VPX for the FPGA carriers. On the FMC, we have up to 33 different modules for I/O, as well as other functions such as synchronization and additional analysis. We also provide modular platforms around these technologies for rugged and swap-based applications. And we also entertain modified COTS opportunities where companies come to us and ask us to make modifications to our existing products for specific applications that they may have. And we'll also take requests from customers that ultimately go back into our catalog of COTS products as well.
Cool. So let's talk a little bit about designing critical embedded systems, you know, defense, aerospace, transportation, comms. You guys have a 3U VPX portfolio that can make my life easier when I'm designing for these markets. And it takes a modular approach, right? So give me some details about that.
So the benefits of a modular approach is the fact that, for one, a lot of the core components have already been designed for you. As a customer, you get access to multiple vendors who subscribe to those standards. And in the end, it ultimately reduces risk in the implementation of projects, especially when there are, you know, strict timing concerns and quality concerns, as well as reliability.
So let's talk more about VITA open standards and how they play into this. Why do you think it's important to adopt open standards, especially in this case?
Well, as I mentioned, you know, when you embark on, especially system developers, when they embark on a project, they're going to face a lot of challenges as well as risks. By adopting standards, you gain access to multiple vendors that ultimately will help provide shorter lead times of product. They provide pathways towards ruggedization, help mitigate any issues through the full life cycle of the project. And ultimately, you'll benefit from the number of customers that they'll be working with. But in the end, it essentially allows you to take a pretty complex problem that has many pieces together and put it together much more quickly and much more effectively in much less time.
All right, Rick, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, I love your hometown, or where 4DSP is based, in Austin. What is the best restaurant in all of Austin?
That is a great question, Amelia. We have so many restaurants to choose from in Austin. In terms of best, one of my favorites is Enoteca. It's an Italian restaurant that may not be the fanciest, but it's related to Vespaio, which is its sister. They share the kitchen. But it's a great place to take family in a relaxed environment. So can't beat great Italian food that they have.
Nice. I'll have to check them out next time I'm in Austin. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me, Rick.
Thank you, Amelia. Thanks for the opportunity.
Let's get into that compact PC business I spoke of earlier. Let me bring in Doug Patterson from AI Tech. We're talking about low-power embedded systems, conduction-cooled mil-spec VME bus boards, and more. Hi, Doug. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
So, for my audience who may not know, what does AI Tech do?
AI Tech produces advanced, embedded, rugged military computers for applications in air, land, sea, and space.
Excellent. So you guys recently released a new compact PC that enhances functionality in low-power embedded systems. So tell me how this compact PC works and what kind of products it's best suited for.
Okay. If you take the concept of a laptop computer and you remove the display, what we've produced is an embedded rugged computer that's good for temperatures of minus 40 to plus 85 for customers who develop their Windows or Linux-based applications and then embed it onto that computer using Ethernet, 1553, USB, wireless, and connecting to their environment, to their platform, and then having that computer either act as a mission management computer or a mission flight control computer or engine control computer, fuel management computer, landing gear control computer, all of this functionality because of the power and performance we've put inside the box with all the interfaces that they need. They come off the shelf right out of the box with an application environment that runs their application that they developed on their laptops for the past several years. They drop it right on this computer. They've got all the interfaces they need, and they're up and running with no entry.
That is super cool. So AI Tech introduced the world's first conduction-cooled mil-spec VME bus boards way back in 1984. So tell me more about the IR&D side of AI Tech and your involvement in particular with VIDA.
Okay. You heard a lot of presentations during the Embedded Tech Trend Conference about new technologies and customer involvement. This goes back decades where customers have been involved. There was an architecture by U.S. Army Tank Command, TACOM, to develop an architecture called SAVA, Standard Army Vtronics Architecture, using VME cards. And AI Tech was produced for this program, the world's first conduction-cooled VME card, 4, 5, 6 years before the competition. I know that because I was with the competition when they did that. So I'm aware of what they did and why they did it. But AI Tech was a very engineering-based and oriented company, not marketing-based, so they kept it quiet. So when I was at Plessy Microsystems / Radstone Technology in 1985, we produced a different version of the first mil-spec VME card, started to standardize it through the IEEE and through VIDA, and then brought that standard out to industry and then claimed that we, Plessy / Radstone, were the first inventors of mil-spec VME. So it's funny how it's come around. But all of the engineering that goes behind that is that there's a problem to solve. The customer has a problem. He needs a certain level of functionality, certain level of performance. He needs a compute platform, and it has to go into a certain environment. And sometimes it's very straightforward and very open and modular that he can do, or he's got to fit into the nooks and crannies of a tank, which have trapezoidal versus rectangular, even circular. So they will take our bus technologies and we'll adapt it for them onto custom technologies. So we do a lot of customization. We do a lot of standard products and develop those products and qualify those products for the applications that our customers are asking for. And as I said, for land, sea, air, and space, we're unique in that regard, is that we serve all of those markets.
So tell me a little bit more about your collaboration and work with VIDA.
I've been with VIDA. Actually, I've been on the executive board of VIDA for several years when I was with AI Tech. I love this developers community. I love the standards community. What's a standard? It's a way to leverage IP out from underneath somebody. That's what a standard really is, and lets everybody start playing on a level playing field. But it also builds an ecosystem. It also, you have a bunch of proprietary structures, whether it's a computer architecture or a mechanical architecture or a chemical architecture. Doesn't matter what it is, but the standards group and the body allows the customer base to draw on all of the experience of all of the individuals who are making these kinds of products and the ability to mix and match. And you can pull all of these modules together without having to totally redesign, let's say, a chassis or an enclosure or what have you. So you know that you can mix and match those modules. And that gets the customer his ability to come to market faster, to lower his NRE, and time to market is a major issue for everybody. So if you can do a defense contractor or a defense system that used to take 10 years when they developed all of their, they put their own transistors, their own ICs on a board, qualified, test it, and then started integrating, developed in software, all of that's been done. They can now field systems today in less than a year with all the cost savings that are associated with that.
Very cool. Now, Doug, it's time your off-the-cuff question. I know you're a bit of a designer in your free time, a little electronics design here and there. Tell me something you've designed recently.
Well, I teamed up with my brother-in-law, and we developed a microprocessor-controlled 35-millimeter printer, microfilm reader printer. You've got microfiche, and you've got a lot of the other formats out there, but 35-millimeter film is a great way to archive data. And when you go to libraries, when you go to large survey firms, they've got all of this data and they don't know what to do with it. And they want to get a report from it. So you just pop the reel on the machine that we invented. They tell it to go search to a certain frame and say, give me 5 prints of this range or of this number of images. And off it goes. And what we did is we developed a microprocessor controlled user interface, and it interfaces with a standard sharp copier. So we pull the guts, all the mechanical stuff out of this copier that tends to fail early, all the hard parts and all. And then we tied that direct to a custom reader and then controlled with an operator interface, both computer and with an operator panel. And it was fun.
That is super cool, Doug. I'm impressed. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me.
You are welcome.
The future of embedded systems, heck, electronic design as a whole, depends heavily on the future of battery technology. And two of the biggest challenges in battery technology are the number of times we can charge said battery and when and how we replace that battery. Well, the University of California, Irvine may have flipped the script on battery technology as we know it. Just by messing around. Okay, so how are they fixing our battery problems once and for all? Well, let's back up a sec and talk about nanowires. For years, many a researcher across the globe has been trying to solve the nanowire charging problem. Nanowires are great. They have a large surface area for storage and transfer of electrons and are highly conductive. But until now, they really haven't held up to repeated discharging, charging, or cycling. They're pretty fragile and end up cracking when they're placed in a standard lithium-ion battery. At most, nanowires can withstand 5,000 to 7,000 charging cycles. Enter Maya Li Tai, doctoral candidate at UCI. Apparently one day she was just messing around in the lab and decided to coat some gold nanowires, which had a shell of manganese dioxide around them, in an electrolyte gel, similar to plexiglass. What she found in the next couple months was nothing short of amazing. Maya Li Tai was able to cycle the testing electrode up to 200,000 times without fracturing any nanowires and, most importantly, without detecting any loss of capacity or power. Researchers at UC Irvine think this gel actually plasticizes the metal oxide in the battery, thus giving it flexibility and preventing cracking. Watch out, world. Nanowires are here to stay. If you want to check out some nanowire battery business, I've included a couple links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page on eejournal.com that includes a technical paper entitled 100K Cycles and Beyond, Extraordinary Cycle Stability for Manganese Dioxide Nanowires Imparted by a Gel Electrolyte. Good stuff. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And hey, if Google Plus is your thing, okay, you can also join our circle on Google Plus. And we have a YouTube channel, keyword EE Journal, chock full of all kinds of techie videos, our very own popular Chalk Talk webcast series, and our video series called On the Scene. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. I'm just saying. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can grab our Fish Fryin' RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you everyone for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or perhaps the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. for the week of May 5th, 2016. I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been Fry.